The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 194.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone to the Rebel Capitalist Show that I actually speak with all the time. That is because it is my mom, Betty Gammon. That's right. She is here for a special Rebel Capitalist Show. We're kind of doing this for my birthday, but she is also one of the top real estate agents in Las Vegas. So we're going to make this all about real estate and maybe ways that you can get involved with some unique opportunities that she is going to present to us. So, Mom, welcome to the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hi, George.
All right.
It's so good to meet you. I've been anxious to meet you.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So where are you right now?
I'm at my home in Las Vegas.
Okay, cool. So why don't you start off by giving people a little bit of background on your what you've done with real estate and kind of the niche that you service in Vegas right now?
Right. Well, you know, it goes back to Portland. Actually, when I was in Portland, I did some remodeling, a couple of houses, and just really liked that. I had a care home for the elderly there, a care home. They call them their foster homes.
When I was in college, Mom?
Yeah, right, exactly.
So 90s.
No, actually, it started out when you were young, because I remember when we started out on that one street, you used to ride your bike back and forth, and then I turned that house on Joslyn Street over to the care home, and then we went to the golf course.
But that was when you were doing the adult care homes.
Yeah, right, in Portland.
Okay, yeah, so that would have been...
time ago.
80s.
Long, long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been the 80s. So your first kind of... entry point into real estate is when you kind of repurpose a single family home and turn it into what you call an adult care home, which means that you separate the rooms to where they can, it's like a miniature nursing home, but it's a more specialty care where you can handle up to, I think, like 5 or 6 residents.
In Portland, it was 5. It was five.
So basically what you're doing is you're taking the rent you're collecting per square foot and just increasing it significantly.
Right. Yeah. A lot of licensing things that had to be done and permits that had to be got, because I added on to that house. You might recall, but actually we added on to that house and added square footage.
Yeah,
and
right.
That ended up being a caregiver's quarters. So I have a living caregiver there.
And then you were doing that when you moved down to Vegas too. When I went to college, you went down to Vegas for my sister, Lise. Just the backstory there is my sister, when did Lise get married? In 88 or 89, something like that?
I don't know.
But anyway, I went down to Phoenix in 92. I almost flunked out of college I almost flunked out of high school, which, Mom, I'm sure...
I remember. Oh, help me.
Yeah, but I did somehow make it down.
All the things that I have done, you were my biggest challenge ever.
I can agree. I'm not going to dispute that at all. But I went down to Phoenix in the early 90s, and then Lise, one of my older sisters, she had her first kid, Michaela,
yeah.
My oldest niece, I think around that time. So that's when you decided to move to Vegas.
Yeah, then, right.
Because Lise was in Vegas.
Yeah.
And when you first went there, I just wanted to point out that you started one of the care homes in Vegas as well. So you just kind of replicated the model.
Right. Yeah. I looked and looked and looked, trying to figure out something that I could do in Las Vegas to put food on the table. And I finally ended up just buying a house, another house,
yeah,
and completely remodeling that. I added, you see, here in Las Vegas, the houses are on a slab. In Portland, if you add something, some plumbing or something, you just crawl under the crawl space and you add some plumbing.
Sure.
But here, in order to add extra plumbing, they had to dig up the concrete. And I mean, it was just really quite a major deal. But anyway, I ended up with 8 bedrooms and 8 bathrooms in that particular house.
Yeah.
There were a couple of rooms that were shared because I was able to get a license for 10. And so then after that, then I bought another house just down the street, and I added 1,600 square feet onto that house. That had 12 bedrooms and I think 10 bathrooms. And I had a quarters for the caregivers. But anyway, that's where I got started. And then I'll tell you, I got so, you know, with the regulations and everything were so, and I had spent up time up at Carson City every time they were in legislature, and it's about 3 months out of every 2 years. And I said, oh, this is just too much. So I sold those. And then that's when I decided to do real estate, because I just like it. I like to remodel. I like real estate. And then I really like interacting with people too. That's my very favorite thing. It's not the paperwork so much, but it's the people.
Yeah. So you started selling real estate as a real estate agent, and this was probably,
I think that was in 2004.
Oh, was it? Okay. So, but then maybe the last 5 years or so, you've really started to find your niche where you're focusing on the Sun City area.
Yeah.
Vegas. And what I think is interesting about that is that really didn't, or that area really didn't see much of a downturn during the GFC or the last housing crisis we had. You saw consistent demand. Am I correct?
Well, yeah. You know what? I'll tell you, George, in 2008, when the crash happened, and I just spent most of my time doing short sales. And I wasn't living in Sun City at the time. However, I had done some work here. I had sold some properties here. But one of the things that I noticed is that the outlying areas where you had people who were working, who were employed, the property values just probably dropped by 50%. And the property values in the age-restricted communities that I watched, they went down a little. They went down some. Most of them went down like so. They went down like so.
Right.
And so it was just a more stable community. And, of course, the thing that I reasoned through is that the people who own the properties, a lot of them paid cash, probably maybe 30% of them anyway paid cash, and a lot of them were stable, you know, they were retired and they had their funds to go. So there were very, very few foreclosures and short sales and age-restricted communities, particularly here in Sun City and also over at Anthem, certain communities, you know, where you had the less, more expensive properties.
Yeah. So what have you seen going on with the Vegas market in general over the last 2 or 3 years, or maybe more specifically in 2020? And then compare that to what's going on in Sun City more specifically.
Well, you know, right now, I mean, we just overall in Las Vegas and Clark County, the inventory is down so much. It's just unbelievable. In fact, I've got a chart here showing you. And so the inventory is just down substantially. I think maybe we got, as I recall, like 4,000 houses in all of Clark County. We've got 2,200,000 people in Clark County. So the inventory is down. In Sun City, Summerlin, the average, the normal properties on the for sale are over 200. That's normal. That's like a 6 month turnaround time. That's between the time it goes on the multiple listing website until it completely closes escrow and records.
Right.
That's normal, 6 month turnaround time. But we have got a total, the last time I looked a couple of days ago, of 36 properties for sale in Sun City.
Wow, geez. So why is that? Why do you think?
George, people are getting out of California.
It's the demand side. It's not the supply side.
Well, and then also the supply side, too, because a lot of people, particularly probably in your age-restricted communities, they really don't want people because of the virus. They don't want people coming in and out of their house. Right. They're concerned about that. But it's really created a real challenge trying to find properties for people.
So I would imagine the prices have really shot up there over the last year.
They have gone up substantially. In fact, one of the things that I wanted to show you is looking over at the Ridges area.
Oh, yeah.
And when you take a look at that, George, the last year, the Ridges area, for those houses that were listed for, I don't know, say 900,000 and above, I can't remember the exact numbers, went up 26%.
Wow, because see, that's what we've been hearing. There's been a lot of downward pressure on those higher priced homes, but in some areas, depending on just where people want to gravitate towards, maybe that's they're going up as well.
Well, I think that what's happening is the people who've got the money are coming out of the high tax states, and they're coming in and they're buying the high quality properties here. And Fiddlesticks, they sell something for $15 million there, and they can buy that same property for like $5 million here.
Yeah, especially if they're coming from San Francisco or Silicon Valley, you know, Palo Alto or some places in LA, it makes a lot of sense. So How do you see it playing out? I mean, if I'm someone right now that has some disposable income, or I've got some liquidity, and I'm looking for an opportunity, but I don't really want to go into the stock market. I like real estate, and I hear this all the time, but it's like, where do you go? It just seems like every place is in a bubble. I mean, do you think that like investing in a property in Sun City and renting it out, if there's an opportunity there that might have a little less downside, or I mean, what's your opinion?
Let me give you an example of a friend of mine who has a rental house here in Sun City.
Okay.
She had owned it for quite a while. It needed to be updated. She had a budget of $10,000. She upgraded it. She changed, put laminate flooring, about 1,100 square feet. It was a small house.
Yeah.
But a really good location, a nice location, low traffic and that sort of thing. And so she completely replaced the flooring with laminate, did all the painting on the wall, changed some of the light fixtures. Her budget was $10,000 and she fixed that up. She ended up turning and renting it for $1,650 a month. And I was figuring out based on, and I mean, that property now would sell for about $300,000, I would guess. So based on that, that's a 0.066%, you know, which is, you know, not too bad.
Right.
Particularly considering that you've got a stable person that's coming in to rent that house, because here, when you're age-restricted communities, you've got a much more stable tenant than you do in a lot of other areas.
Right. They're not going to trash the place, that's for sure.
Right.
Most likely going to pay rent. Yeah, so the RV ratios are still quite a bit lower than the 1% that we...
It's hard to get 1%, George, don't you think? I really do. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, back... You remember when I first got involved with real estate back in 2012, when I was buying in Kansas City, I mean, a typical property I'd buy, remember, was about 50 grand. I'd throw 25 into it. So my cost basis was maybe 75,000. And I was renting those out all day long for $1,000 a month.
They turned out to be delightful properties. You remember I went over there and you were showing me around and, boy, they really look nice.
Yeah, most people, I say I bought a house for $50,000, put 25 into it, so your cost basis is 75, and they think it's just some piece of garbage in the ghetto that you wouldn't be caught dead within a mile of. But you don't understand, back then, the banks were just giving these houses away, and they were in really nice neighborhoods. I mean, they're nothing fancy, but they're a nice ranch, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, call it 1,200 square feet. Good neighborhood, great school district. It's in a very desirable area. And, you know, back then you could get those deals. Now it's just the complete opposite.
Yeah, the pride of ownership neighborhood. And it really showed it. The lawns were well maintained. They looked really nice, right?
Yeah. So are you helping any investors right now in the Vegas area or?
Right now, I mean, the inventory is down so far that it's just nobody, there's just no motion, there's no movement that's going on. George, in our entire office, and which is a satellite office, it's not the corporate office, it's a satellite office, and we've got maybe a dozen real estate agents there.
Right.
We mostly work Sun City, Summerlin. There's only one listing in Sun City, Summerlin, and there's only two listings in total. I mean, it's just, there's no inventory out there. I'm hoping that, I got a couple coming up down the road here, probably in another couple of weeks, actually. But it's just been, it's been a real change. I had a listing just outside of Sun City, which is in Summerlin, but just outside of Sun City. And it took a while to sell it. We overpriced it. We knew that it was overpriced a little bit and finally sold, but.
So how do you see it playing out though, Mom? I mean, are there builders coming in and seeing the opportunity and saying, okay, well, there's a lot of demand. Let's meet that with some more supply here so we can make money. Or are the regulations so onerous that they're not able to build at even the existing price point and turn a profit?
Well, no, they are building. There's no question. In fact, actually this morning, I was just looking at the new age restricted, which we call 55 plus communities.
Yeah.
And to be three of them that are in Clark County that are in construction now. They haven't even started selling.
Okay.
But I'll tell you the thing that I see that I really don't quite understand. I know I was listening to Jason and to Kevin McElroy to their YouTube thing this morning, and they were talking about the thing. They think that property values are probably going to go up, and I think that that might be applicable in certain areas. However, my thinking is that here in Las Vegas, the people who are employed, they're dependent upon the casinos. We're a service industry community.
Right.
And I mean, the unemployment rate now is, I think, around 11%, which I think is probably on the low side based on the statistics that are showing.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, and they can do the forbearance all they want. They can do the rent, the delay, the rents coming in. But at some time, that's got to be paid. And they can do all the forbearance. But if these people still don't have jobs at the time they have to start making payments again, all the forbearance in the world isn't going to help them out. So I think that it probably is dependent upon the particular community and depending on whatever industry is in that particular area. And here in Nevada, we are so dependent on the service industry, then generally that's, and the entertainment industry, and generally that's the last thing to start to go up.
Right. But so it's this weird dichotomy between that creating this downward pressure and then the upward pressure from people fleeing California. So it's like the worse it gets in California, the more bullish or the better it gets for real estate in Las Vegas. Oddly enough.
Right. Well, the thing is, though, I think that probably my expectation down the road, George, and I think there are a lot of other realtors that are in agreement with that, is that we're going to start having a lot of foreclosures and short sales. And then, of course, investors will come flocking in and picking properties up. Right now, we have very, very few properties.
Oh, I see. Right.
Very, very few that are in foreclosure right now. I think maybe 64 or something, not very many, just a few throughout the whole Clark County.
Yeah, I think that's consistent, Mom, with Ken's view. I believe Ken's view is you'll see prices go up while we have this forbearance going on. But once that ends, there might be some downward pressure in the later stages of 2021 or 2022. And just to be clear, in nominal terms, I think that's Ken's view. And we could see prices going down, feeding on themselves. So kind of this feedback loop. Just because price is going down, more people start to sell. And then if the economy does get worse due to another lockdown, as an example, you could see some of these retirees, if their 401k goes down significantly because of the stock market, then they're forced to sell their house because mm-hmm. they need that equity to maintain their lifestyle or to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm. See, I've wondered about that too with the pension funds, George. I don't know. I really have thought about the pension funds and what that's going to happen down the road. Because right now, I think you pointed out that they have to get at least a 7% return.
Yeah, right.
To be able to fund those. So, you know, if we really go into a crisis and the government doesn't meet their obligations in that area, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, let me just explain where you're going with that. So, all these people that are reliant on the pension funds for their future income or for their retirement, if those pension funds go bust, they don't have the money or there's a shortfall, then those people don't get the retirement benefits they're expecting. Therefore, they can't pay their mortgage.
Right.
Can't pay their mortgage, then there's a forced liquidation, and then you have more supply hitting the market. So I think that was your point, wasn't it, Mom?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So that would really affect particularly the retirement communities, of course.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because people are so reliant upon those pensions. You know, another thing that I was reading the other day, and this is just on the government's own website, where they are projecting that there's two main Social Security funds, and one of them will get down to $0, will be basically insolvent within 3 or 4 years. The other one, they're projecting that it'll be insolvent in like 2031 or 32, but that's based on some very rosy projections as far as the tax revenue that's going to be received by the government. And I think they're assuming that the tax revenue stays the same based on the tax rates, but what they're not factoring into the equation is that rates really don't matter that much for tax revenues collected. It's really about a recession and it's about the stock market. So if the stock market goes down for any period of time, we have a double dip recession in the stock market. I think we're definitely we haven't had a double dip. We've stayed in a recession in the real economy, but then that would create kind of more downward pressure where those people, even if they are getting their Social Security benefits, they're in devalued dollars. I'm not saying that they're just going to default, but they're in devalued dollars because the government has to print the money, or the Fed does, which creates more currency units chasing same goods and services. So they might not have the purchasing power. And that's why I've been telling everyone right now, and I'd love to get your opinion on this. I've been telling everyone, just make sure if you've got a mortgage that it's a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, because then that's not going to affect you as much. even if you're getting devalued dollars, you're still paying the same exact mortgage payment. So that inflation won't affect you as negatively as it otherwise would.
Right, exactly. You know, George, if we could talk a little bit about some of the advantages of living in Nevada.
Yeah, sure.
Great. You know, a lot of people come here because they're looking for a lower tax rate. And, and Nevada doesn't have any income tax at all.
Right.
We do have a sales tax. I think it's 8.38% that we have. Part of it goes to the state and part of it goes to the county. And so we do have that sales tax. And so that's one of the reasons that they do. There are other reasons that they come here. We have something that's called an asset protection trust that's unique to Nevada. Actually, I think there might be some other states that have it too. But it's an asset protection trust. You'd have to talk to an attorney about it, but it provides a complete barrier around your trust after it's seasoned for a couple of years, as I understand it, and I'm not an attorney, right. But it provides a barrier around your trust where nobody can infiltrate it at all. So as an example, if one were to set one of these trusts up and put their assets inside of it, and it's a process that you go through and have attorneys do, you put your assets inside of there. There is a 2-year period of time where once that 2-year period is reached, no one can enter and go inside of that asset trust, I would assume, except the IRS, of course. So that's a real nice feature. There are some glitches to it. And one of them, as I understand, is that for the manager, you have to have somebody managing it that is not a family member. I'm guessing that probably attorneys and banks are the ones that put that together to have that legal in the state of Nevada.
Yeah.
The other thing that I would like to point out, George, is that we rarely have snow. We got snow yesterday, and everybody.
Phoenix, we got snow/hail.
Oh yeah. Oh, did you? Yeah. This was snow. It was about that high, and I've got a video here of a friend of mine that was out in the backyard making a snowman. And his wife was sitting in the chair there saying, "Oh, honey, you're making such a nice snowman." Oh, I'll tell you, that's a classic. So some of the other things about Nevada is, also we've got something, at least here in Clark County, that's called the homestead. And the homestead is something that you can do once you purchase a house. This has to be a primary residence. Mm. And once you purchase a house, you record it with the recorder's office. It's like $25, $35 to do it. And it's called a homestead. And what that does, that puts an extra barrier around somebody coming in and filing a claim against your house. Now, that doesn't affect mortgages. It doesn't affect IRS. It doesn't affect, some of those things like that, any kind of taxes. However, if you've got any kind of a dispute with a builder or something, or somebody comes to do your landscaping and they file a lien on it, they can't penetrate it because of this extra barrier protection. It's called a homestead. And it's very easy to file it. And there again, with a homestead, if you refinance, you have to re-enter the homestead form. Or if you changes at all, refinancing it or change the name of it or whatever, you have to refile that.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
So you've got a very good tax environment, relatively speaking, and then you've got solid asset protection.
Right, right, exactly.
And usually no snow, other than Mount Charleston.
That's the other thing.
You actually want snow.
Well, you know, that's the other thing. A lot of people think that we don't have anything but casinos here, but my gosh, we've got Mount Charleston. There's a ski slope for like 45 minutes from where I live.
Lake Mead
and Red Rock. Yeah, a lot of really nice stuff, a lot of nice stuff around. Oh, you know what, George, another thing that I was thinking about too, as far as that minimum wage is concerned, you know, the White House is talking about increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour.
Right.
I don't think that most people realize how self-defeating that is. I mean, you know, because it's just like the farmer has to pay $15 an hour, plus he has to meet 7.25% Social Security. So it's 15% plus 7.25% he has to match that Social Security.
Right.
And then so the farmer has to pay it, and then the wholesaler has to pay it, and the distributor has to pay it, and the grocer has to pay it, and on and on and on it goes. So by the time you add up all of those, the cost of the product at the end is just huge. Much more than that $15 an hour, and so that the cost of their goods keeps going up, and they're, even though they're getting $15 an hour, they're actually being able to consume much less.
Yeah, and the counter argument there is that the higher prices will be absorbed by the profits with the business, but that's a complete fallacy because they're not understanding that usually the businesses who employ those types of people have just razor thin margins. I mean, razor thin. You look at like a McDonald's as an example. The franchisee usually runs at like a 5% margin, where 40% of your total expense is payroll. So if you have your payroll go double, you're instantly out of business. There isn't enough wiggle room in the profit to absorb that type of hit. Mm-hmm. And people just don't understand that. I get a lot of people that say, okay, well, I understand that the economy is poor. I want more freedom. I want more flexibility in my life. What should I do? And I always talk to people about taking the bull by the horns and just starting a side hustle. Or if you want to create more income for yourself, go ahead and do it. Don't make excuses. Just get outside of your comfort zone and make it happen. And so I think you're a great example of that because we've been talking over the last couple months. I actually bought you one of these ginormous Mac computers for your
birthday.
because you had an idea that you wanted to start an online business in addition to what you're doing with real estate. You're a full-time real estate agent, and I don't know if you want to give away your age. You want to tell people how old you are?
Oh, no.
Okay, so what I'll say is,
I mean, I'm up there. I'm way up there. way there.
Well, I'm 47, Mom.
Oh.
I'm 47. Let's just say that you did not have me in your teens. I was not born when you were a teenager.
No.
Nor was I born when you were in your 20s.
Okay, George, that's enough.
Okay, we'll stop right there. But my point is you're at the age where most people would just be, I don't know, lawn bowling or playing bingo or something like that. And you're out there, a full-time real estate agent. You enjoy staying busy, but then you're also starting a side hustle as well, where you're trying to buy, because you go to all these estate sales. And a lot of times you manage the estate sales because of, you know, you're a real estate agent, you're in Sun City. And so you're like, wow, I can buy all of this stuff that's super cheap and I can just go ahead and start flipping it on eBay. And I don't know to what extent you've dove into that, but you've been watching other YouTube channels to try to learn how to do it, just so it's something that you can do on the side because, number one, you enjoy it, but obviously, you know, you want some more disposable income. So tell people about that journey.
Well, you know, George, you really have been an inspiration to me about this as well, because I watch you and I watch the things that you're doing and I think, I think I can do that. But anyway, you know, the thing that I'm going to be taking and recording a lot of different communities, age-restricted communities, because we've got about 20 of them here in Las Vegas, nice age-restricted communities. And I'm going to be recording those, and I've got somebody working on a website for me and putting YouTube attachments onto there so people can view different properties and be interviewing people that have different clubs and that sort of thing.
Yeah, for lead gen for your real estate business. Yeah, I didn't even talk about that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That. And then also, I really think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to try selling stuff on eBay and other different. I've already done some stuff on Marketplace, Facebook Marketplace, and it works just fine. It's really a lot of fun. You know, I'll tell you a story, George, about this property that I was telling you about that I sold over in Summerlin a couple of months ago. The lady who owned the property, she was out of state and she'd broken both of her feet. And we had to figure out a way to get all the furniture out of that house. And this was a particular community where they didn't allow you to have moving and estate sales. And so the only way I could sell everything in there was by doing it by appointment only. Hmm. So people would call me and it would go back on Marketplace. And I was going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth to the property. And we got it all sold. And I got enough out of there so that at least the little stuff I could bring over and put into my garage. And you should see my garage now. So anyway, I'm selling stuff on Marketplace. The other day, a young man from California came over with a pickup. His pickup was loaded with stuff on the back there. And wow. There was a particular mirror that I had. And so he came by, he wanted that mirror. And his truck up was loaded. And I got to talking to him. And he said, I lost my job. He said, I was a waiter in California. And I lost my job. And he said, I was trying to figure out a way to make a living. I'm talking about innovation here. And so what he does is he comes to Las Vegas, where we have a lot of moving sales, particularly here in Sun City and other age-restricted communities, a lot of estate and moving sales. He comes in and he loads up with stuff and he takes it back to California, sticks it in his warehouse and sells it in California and makes a nice profit. I know. I really admire that. Good for him. And that's talking about innovation. And I think that's a classic example of somebody who is trying to make something. He probably will continue with it. It's probably a lot better than having to wait tables, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great story. So yeah. let's do one more story, Mom. And okay. Then I actually put out on Twitter some questions that people wanted me to ask you.
Oh, yeah.
I'll go down and ask you a couple questions directly from the people that are out there on Twitter. But probably one of your best stories, and I would assume maybe the highlight of your life, is when I tricked you into skydiving with me for my birthday.
Oh man, yeah.
You want me to tell that story? Or you want to tell that story?
Yes. Go ahead and tell the story, George. That would be quite. Oh man, I'll tell you that, and then I'll fill in too. Because go ahead. You probably don't even know all of it, but go ahead.
Well, what happened was I was in Phoenix at the time. This is before I retired. And oddly enough, I was just in basically this building where I am today, but just the sister building. But anyway, and you were over and you came in early for my birthday because you didn't have time to stay for the actual birthday. But you're like, OK, I'm going to come in a couple days early. So you drove down from Vegas to hang out. And then I think you're going to leave on a Thursday and my birthday is like on a Friday. Something like that. And you said, and remember, you asked me, you said, well, what are you doing for your birthday? And I said, well, it's don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And so then you kept inquiring, you're getting nosy. You're like, come on, tell me. And I didn't want to tell you exactly what we're doing. And basically, just to kind of backfill the story, I had a bunch of employees and friends that I was going to take out skydiving. And I knew that some of them it was a surprise for everyone. And I knew that a couple of them wouldn't go if I told them what we were doing. So I was just going to put them in the SUVs that I had rented, take everyone out there. And, you know, I was going to kind of just lay it on them when we got to the airport and said, okay, everyone else is doing it, so you should do it as well, to kind of give them that peer pressure. But in the back of my mind, I said, okay, well, here's an opportunity. Because if I can get my mom to do it, a lot of these guys, you know, these 20-year-old guys, if they see my, I won't say how old you were at the time, but if they see my mother doing it, there's no way they can not do it because they wouldn't be able to live with themselves. So I'm like, okay, I got to figure out a way to get mom to do this. How can I do it? And I said, okay, I know what I'll do. And I remember what I said. I said, okay, mom, and you kept wanting to know. You're just pushing and pushing and pushing. I said, okay, fine. Here's the deal. I'll tell you what we're doing for my birthday under one condition, and that's that you do it as well. You have to join us. And remember, you're going back, you're like, oh, shoot, should I do it? And then finally you said, okay, fine, I'll stay. You know, what are we doing? I said, "Ah, congratulations, you're going skydiving Friday." And remember, and sure enough, I got the SUVs. I rented the SUVs, loaded them up with the people who we took out there. And I knew there was two people. One was my younger brother.
Yeah.
And a couple other guys that worked for me. And we got them out there. And it the game plan happened just to perfection. As soon as they found out what we were doing, they freaked out. They said, "No way am I doing it. Absolutely not. I will not go up on a plane. You cannot force me to do this." And I said, no, I'm not going to force you. But just FYI, my mom's doing it." And remember that they turned white, just like a ghost, because at that point in time, they knew that they really didn't have a choice. Remember that?
Yeah. Well, George, the other thing that I remember about that really was a lot of fun. It was kind of like scary fun. And I remember that we went up in that airplane, and that airplane, honest to God, was put together with duct tape. I mean, there was going up there and you're jostling around in this airplane, and I'm thinking, let's see, I think maybe I'm safer skydiving than
exactly.
Anyway, it was tandem, and the gentleman was on the back here. Of course, I was in the front. And so when you're going out, the door is open and you're hanging on like this, hoping that they just push out, take your arms, pushing you out. And so they're going down, and oh my gosh, I'll tell you, talking about, of course, do a few rolls. He also had a camera on his wrist. So yep. He was recording my face as we were going down. And if you've ever seen a Great Dane dog with his head hanging out a window going 100 miles an hour, that's what you see. And so finally, when we got down, and of course, then it slowed down, and we could ease it down and go down and down. It was really fun. We landed. It was just fine. I got to the bottom, and I said, "Oh, wow, that was fun." And these other two people that you're talking about, they were just, "Then, well, we got to go now. We've got to go now." Then, of course, shortly after that, if you recall, I vomited.
Yeah, that's what, oh man, I was laughing so hard. I literally had tears coming out of my eyes. I was crying. I was laughing so hard when you're down, because you're so excited that you did it, and then you just got sick and then just threw up like right in a cactus or something. That was classic. Yeah. And then remember, they made a CD. This tells you how long ago it was. They made a CD. This was, what was that, 2009 or something like that. But anyway, they made a CD and they put it to music that you could take home of that camera that they had when you're going down. And then remember, you took that home and you were putting that on display everywhere. Remember, you took it to church like the next 6 weeks in a row to show everyone at church. Remember that?
I didn't do that, George, but I'll tell you what I had in mind is that probably for, you know, when I die and I have a memorial service, I thought, oh, that would be something really funny to show. You know, you want people to come to something like that and have fun and enjoy themselves and laugh, and that would be a good one to show.
Well, there you go. Well, there. I hope you still got it. Do you still have the CD? Well,
yeah, I've got it. All right,
there you go. So let me go to Twitter, Mom, and see what people want me to ask you.
Oh, okay.
What were her thoughts when her son almost failed high school? And did she expect him to be where he is now? That's the first question.
Boy, my thoughts, I'll tell you, I've got scabs and sores on my knees right now. My knees are so old and crickety and crunkety because I was on my knees constantly when you were young, George. Oh, my gosh, I'll tell you, I never prayed so much in my life.
All right. And then, did you expect me to be where I am now, I guess, is the second part of the question.
You know, George, I always knew that you had huge, huge potential. I mean, you were just, you always were a risk taker, even as a little tiny kid. Do you remember when we got you that little bicycle? What, 3 years old or something? And your dad had training wheels on the back of it, and you were on it like maybe just a few days, and you insisted he take the training wheels off. So he did. And so you would learn how to ride that bicycle around that great big parking area that we had. And you would come around, you'd come within an inch of us. We'd be standing there, like so. It was as though your dimensions, your visual perceptions of things was very, very accurate. But and then also that time, do you remember that time that you fell down and you broke your elbow and you had to go into surgery to replace the elbow? Well, they didn't give you, we requested that you didn't want any anesthesia. We wanted locals to do it. And so your dad promised you a complete football uniform if you didn't move. And you were in that surgery for an hour and a half. I was in there with you, and you did not breathe hardly because you wanted that football uniform. But they just and you got that thing repaired. We got pictures of you with that uniform on, with your arm like so, with running around with a football in the other hand.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that extremely well. I was either 6 or 7. I think I was 6, wasn't I, when that happened?
You might not even have been that old, George. I think you were probably 5. You were just a little tiny kid, maybe even 4. I mean, just a little kid.
Is it true everyone who moves to Las Vegas has a story? Did you hear that one, Mom?
I heard that one, but what's going through my mind is, who doesn't have a story? I mean, no matter where you move, a story.
So I think they're specifically talking about Vegas real estate on this one. Should we buy there? Are they buying, selling real estate, and the ratio within the selling, buying? I'm not sure. I'm not sure what specific metrics they're talking about, but I think the thrust of their question is, are prices going down in Las Vegas? If so, in what areas? But I think it's just quite the opposite. They're going up, Mom.
Not right now, although as we talked about before, I anticipate that they probably will, because we're so dependent on the entertainment industry, and the unemployment, I'm concerned, is going to really go down in certain areas. Some areas won't be as affected, but a lot of areas will be.
Oh, is there a water shortage in Vegas?
You know, water is potentially an issue, and I know that they're trying to get water in from other areas. And, of course, a lot of that water goes over to Southern California as well from Hoover Dam. And so, yeah, there are water issues that they're trying to resolve. We do have in the summertime certain restrictions on the amount of water that we can use. And, of course, they encourage desert landscaping. And so, yeah, that is a concern. That's true.
If you were someone that was thinking of moving to Vegas, how would you weigh the risk there? I mean, is it very, very low probability? How would you think through that?
Well, I think the probability, I think, is probably fairly good. It's pretty high. However, both the city and the county are working and trying to get extra water from other sources. So I think it's going to be resolved.
But this kind of goes back to your last question. But at what age was George when you noticed that he had that spark that would one day make him very successful? Or maybe, I don't know, maybe I haven't gotten there yet, Mom. Maybe what age? Maybe 55? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, George, the thing is, I mean, from the time you were even a small baby, I knew that there was something out of the ordinary for you. For one thing, you had great big feet. We knew that you were very tall. But no, there was something about you. You had a certain determination to you, even as a little child, and you were very, very observant. You noticed a lot of things that other people didn't notice. And you might recall, you really liked birds. And of course, we would sit in that bathroom where you had with the great big long window and a chair. Watch birds. And as you walk, if we drove down the street, you would notice certain birds, and we would go back and check and find out what they were, what kind of bird. And the only thing you knew was birds hot, birds cold. Birds hot, bird cold. In other words, they live where it's cold or they live where it's hot. So that's kind of where you started out. But you had a lot of curiosity. And then, of course, reading that to Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. And I had to read that to you repeatedly every day, sometimes several times a day. And I had to have every inflection absolutely perfect, every way phrase absolutely just the way you wanted it. So, I mean, there's an indication that you wanted everything just exactly the way it should be. Oh, yeah. And
that's the way I want it.
Yeah, the way you thought.
I like things my way.
Yeah, I know.
But I don't know if that's an indication of future success or future problem with authority.
Well, we always allowed you quite a bit of freedom. You know, we lived on that property and you were able to run around. We have that German Shepherd dog, and you would run around with the German Shepherd dog on this property and this land. So you had that ability of freedom, and I know that your dad always encouraged that, you know, to allow you a lot of freedom. You would go to church, you would sit in the front row, and then you could walk back and forth a little bit in the front. But as far as success in business, by the time you got to teenager, I was praying so much for you. I'll tell you, George, just whether you were successful in business or not didn't make any difference to me.
But so why were you praying for me? Most people might not get that.
Oh, George, I'll tell you, you were a handful. You were just a handful. Oh, my gosh, you were a handful.
Because I was getting in trouble all the time.
You're getting into trouble. You paid no attention to authority. Oh, my goodness.
And I did not do well in school.
You didn't do, I think you probably might have done better than I thought you did. I don't know.
And keep in mind, I almost flunked out of high school.
I know. But so, then you played golf too, George. You remember we lived on that one house, and we were probably, maybe 6 blocks or 7, 8 blocks away from a golf course. And you used to go over there and play, and in the rain, it was just pouring down rain, and you'd be on your bicycle with the golf carts over on the top of your head, and you'd be going over there, you're going to play golf. Extremely determined, extremely goal-oriented and determined. So, you know, there were those elements about you that I always thought you had huge potential.
Yeah, most people don't know that, because I don't talk about that very much, but I almost played golf professionally.
Yeah, right.
I got into my 20s. But anyway, the main point there, and the reason I want to bring that up is because I've had a relatively high degree of success, or a lot of success compared to, you know, how most people measure it in my life. And it's just to show the young kids out there, or really people at any age. I mean, you look at your story with what you're doing with eBay and kind of the estate sales and how you're still selling real estate. Look at what happened when I was a kid, and most people would say that I had potential, but I was really going in the wrong direction. And most indicators would lead you to believe that I would really struggle in life, and I ended up turning out okay. So if mom can do it at her age, if I can do it with that many, let's call them headwinds, anyone out there can be successful at whatever they're passionate about, as long as they're willing to hustle, as long as they're willing to work hard and stay focused, and maybe get outside of their comfort zone every once in a while. What do you think about that, Mom?
Well, I think that's true, and I think it's also important to make a contribution to people. We need to make a contribution to society as a whole, right. And I think it's something that you're doing, George, and I really respect that.
Well, I appreciate it. So, Mom, for all the people who want to rush in and start buying Las Vegas real estate, or maybe they just want to get a little bit more information, I know you're always happy to talk to people and kind of download all the information you've accumulated over the years on the market and maybe specific questions they have, where can they go to reach out and contact you?
George, the best thing to do is to email me at BettyGammon@gmail.com. Two is I've got a guy working on a website for me. I had somebody doing it a couple of years ago or so, and it turned out to be such a mess, I cannot believe it. I've got somebody here actually in Sun City who's helping me with it and getting things in order. So I'm hoping within the next couple of weeks they can look me up on my website. Well, they can now, but it's everything is all garbled and messed up, and that's BettyGammon.com.
All right, Mom. Well, I appreciate your time.
Oh, no. Okay. Bye-bye, George.
All right, bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.